how do we take care of people? And I believe if we take care of those people, they're going to take care of us. And the leaders are going to look awesome and get raises and bonuses and everything else that we deserve because of the hard work we do. But it's not because of us. It's because our people feel good about what they're doing.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest. A beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with David Taylor, president of the Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. David has been providing services to clients with various nursing, perioperative, ancillary service line, and business development needs across the United States for over 30 years. His areas of expertise are services that improve operational and clinical efficiencies while helping organizations function more effectively to improve their market position. David's particular area of specialty lies in the operational improvement of surgical services and central service / sterile processing departments. He is a member of the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses and maintains membership in the Business, Industry, Consulting, and Leadership Specialty Assemblies. David also completed his Lean Healthcare certification at Villanova University, is a nationally recognized speaker, and has been published in nationally recognized peer-reviewed journals on various perioperative subjects. And I know, Hank, Mike, I am really excited to talk to David today. Just another great guest, and I'm sure that his insights will be valuable to the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. I think this is going to be a really good one. David has such a unique bio in terms of being able to collaborate across all aspects of perioperative services, but you can tell that he has a very special place in his focus for sterile processing and the challenges there within, and really just breaking down those silo walls and talking about culture. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can talk about here.
That's right, guys. And then we get to talk about one of my favorite focuses, the OR Today Live conference that's coming up in Nashville this next year. Cannot wait to bring that in front of our listeners, primarily because our vision is this podcast is to get connected and get that information out to the masses for the educational opportunities that are already out there for folks to grow together in their expertise and their professionalism. So I'm excited to have David on board today to talk with us about it.
As a reminder, you can subscribe to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or search for Beyond Clean on your favorite podcast application. We can also be heard on the Sterile Education app, available on iTunes and Android.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time, easy Multitrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
With us now is David Taylor, president of the Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. David, I want to welcome you to the show. I'm excited for our two segments with you today. The first one, we'll be talking about confronting challenges of OR and SPD collaboration. And then we'll get a little bit into the OR Today Live conference, a little preview and promotion there. So looking forward to diving into that. But first off, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us on Beyond Clean.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure, and thank you very much for this opportunity. It's very exciting.
You know, we've talked a lot over the last, I guess, 20-plus episodes since we started in 2017, and there's a common theme just discussing that communication between the OR, between sterile processing. We had an excellent guest, Peter Nickel, and he had some, I guess, words of advice about how to break down those barriers and to foster positive communication. We had a really interesting story from Bob Mars, who he told us about an experience in the OR that he had had when he was a sterile processing manager at one time. And I'm definitely interested in furthering that discussion with you, but maybe we just set the table by talking about some common causes of that OR SPD culture and the challenges that they face there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you're saying, you know, what's the common cause? And I don't know that there is a common cause, you know, surrounding the issues of communications, whether you're looking at the communications themselves, looking within the silos of the departments, the failures, the trust issues, whatever. I think we have to look at the changes and the challenges that we faced in healthcare over the last couple decades. You know, the way I look at it is that our patients are providing us with this new paradigm shift, and this paradigm shift is quality. And I don't think healthcare is ready for it. We talk about it a lot. I think that oftentimes you'll hear speakers, you'll hear CEOs, presidents of hospitals, CNOs, they'll all say that healthcare is changing. You know, I think it's already changed. I think it changed already 5, 6, 7, maybe even 10 years ago. And if you're saying it's still changing, then you probably missed the boat. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek in some respects, because I have some wonderful folks that I've either worked for or worked with over the years. And I know that things continually change. But when you look at what we're doing in the operating room today and what we did 10 years ago and then how we get paid, the reimbursements, and then the relationship between OR and sterile processing, it is very different. And it continues to be very different almost on a daily basis because of some of the regulatory guidelines that we're faced with, some of the challenges in our reimbursement value and what we place on a surgical procedure and then how we measure that. From a metric standpoint, so many of those variables have changed. You know, when we look at healthcare, patients used to get admitted to the hospital a week before surgery, and we got paid for all of those days. We performed the surgery, and we got paid. If the patient contracted an SSI, we got paid to treat it. And if they ended up getting a UTI, we got paid. If they got bed ulcers, we got paid. I mean, we got paid for everything. We didn't have to be good at anything. CEOs and CNOs and leaders back then, you know, they were the heroes because the money just kept pouring in. Now, healthcare is so different that if the patient stays one day longer than what the government says or the insurance industry says that that's allowable. We don't get paid on that anymore. So we're so cognizant of what length of stay means.
You bring up a good point there, going back to the causes maybe of these cultural challenges that we see. It may just be external pressure pushing on both of these teams. You know, the OR really feels it on those turnover times, on the pressure with staffing, obviously, and perhaps bubbles over into that relationship with SPD. But then again, on the sterile processing side, there are similar external pressures. If it's access to capital equipment that's stressing out technicians because they can't get the trays turned over quick enough to answer those communication requests from the OR. And I've seen those teams just continue to spiral. And you're right, it's different depending on the facility, but I don't think anyone would argue today that the state of OR-SPD relationships is wholly positive and wholly good. And I guess today we want to focus on how do we pinpoint those issues? And then, you know, what are some successes that you've seen as a perioperative leader on how to overcome those challenges on the front lines?
Yeah, Hank, you nailed it. I think the key points are looking at what we've done, looking where we're at today and where we want to be tomorrow. We are a production-based system, if you will, in surgical services, whether you support surgical services or you're in the OR itself. Production is huge. In the old days, the only metric we had to measure was, you know, how many surgeries we were going to do today, this week, or this month. Now we're looking at all types of metrics that measure first case on time starts, which has an impact on sterile processing. Can they get those instruments up to the OR in a timely manner so that those cases can start on time? We're looking at turnover times, and those turnover times are supposed to be sub 20, 25 minutes, and can SPD turn those over? When we look at lean processing as part of that cultural shift too, you know, in the 70s and 80s, I remember we did time studies where we had somebody with a clipboard and a stopwatch do everything. And this is the days when we used to put our own prep sets together and our own suture sets, and we used to sterilize linen for our sterile drapes and stuff, right? So that's how we measured everything in the SPD for our staffing and for our budget, was we time-stamped everything. Now everybody wants to measure SPD based on the OR minute, and that's so ridiculous.
It is.
You might get 30 minutes in SPD because that procedure took 30 minutes, but they opened 16 trays.
Yep, absolutely.
You mentioned capital. That's huge. I cannot tell you how many clients I've been to or how many ORs I've worked in over the last 10 years that don't have enough instrumentation to meet the basic needs on a daily basis. So they have to turn those instruments over. And in human nature, because we're pushing people so hard and to do more so fast, we know that those processes have to get cut somewhere. So does somebody skip a step during the cleaning process? Do they not sonic the instrumentation? Do they not do a really good inspection and return that through the decon space and return it with a clean instrument? Do we skip steps and not do a biological? All those factors have a huge impact on patient safety. There's not a day goes by that I don't read an article on the internet or in a newspaper about a sterile processing department or an endoscopic scope that wasn't properly processed, terminally cleaned, or sterilized. Patients were affected. In fact, hundreds of patients have died over the course of the last couple of years because thousands of patients have been exposed to non-sterile instruments or stuff that's not been properly cleaned, so the bioburden has been present. I mean, it's just astronomical to think, but how can we as humans, the human factor, if you will, be able to function at a high level if we're asked to do more with less, less instruments, less staff, less equipment? It's very difficult. It's troublesome to me.
So along those same lines, how do we as leaders kind of lead the charge in making those sorts of changes that are necessary to protect the patients?
Well, I remember a day when the OR nursing director, the nursing leaders had power. They weren't afraid to kick doors down. They weren't afraid to speak their mind. They weren't afraid to hold folks accountable. And that wasn't just their staff. That was their physicians. It was anesthesia. It was administration. It was everybody. But we were a different world back then. Now we have leaders that are entering the operating room that have really minimal experience at best. In fact, a lot of leaders kind of grow up within their organization, and it's very difficult for an OR nurse, new leader, who's grown up with his or her peers, and now they have to be in charge of them and hold them accountable, and hold them accountable to the standards. If we back it up even further, nursing schools do disservice to surgical services because they don't provide a true operating room experience during the clinical environment. So it's very difficult to recruit nurses into the operating room to begin with, and then groom those nurses in a succession plan that makes sense so that they'll eventually become leaders. If we're going to change this mindset of quality and make that the paramount of what we do so we have good, safe patient care, then we have to be able to work together and train folks, but we also have to do it in a sensible way. Now, the dynamics in sterile processing is changing very much so across the country. Before, it used to be folks that grew up kind of in the sterile processing department became the managers, maybe the directors. But now more and more nurses are either entering the field or are responsible for it as part of the service line. So if I, as a leader, don't work very well with you, my sterile processing director or my sterile processing manager, we've already got problems to begin with because my mindset is to push for more instruments to be readily available for surgery. Where my mindset really should be is how can I support your department to ensure you have the right equipment and the right processes in place so that the instruments get delivered without the frustration and the aggravation that we're faced with on a daily basis.
Yeah, David, that's a great point, especially speaking from a sterile processing leader perspective, having that peer relationship with a perioperative director can be huge. And not having that relationship, that's where the challenge is.
It is. It's a huge challenge. And I think it's because, as I said about the nursing kind of career path, if you will, many nurses don't really know much about sterile processing. And I'm not trying to belittle the profession. It's just you can't know everything. So you rely on the people that work with you in those departments. But if those folks weren't properly trained, and they continue to train the new employees, then we're not training them to the current standards of practice that we're expecting of them. So 15, 20 years ago, I seen a huge shift in how sterile processing functions. And I think there's a few hospitals still out there that do it this way. But 30 years ago, I started my career scrubbing surgical cases. That's how I started my day. At the end of my day or at the end of my caseload, I would go to sterile processing and I would begin processing the instruments I used. So I had a different perspective on the instrumentation itself, the cleaning process, if you will, because I was ultimately responsible from beginning to end. We all know that cleaning begins at the point of use. So the surgical technologist, the first assistant, the ones at the table should be cleaning those instruments initially. So when they go to SPD, they're not in the worst condition they've ever been in.
You read my mind. That was my next question, was to talk about point of use cleaning because it's so important. I think you really did detail sort of where it's been to where it is today. A lot of people did see that entire process through, but I think because the instrumentation's gotten so complex, you do have to compartmentalize the roles and responsibilities, but it also wound up separating the staff on two different floors, so they don't necessarily spend time in the lunchroom together. Those are just some general things that I've always noticed. I always felt like, well, yeah, they could be having different specialties, but if you look at anesthesiology, right, the people who are doing that job are still intermingled with the surgeons and with the surgical techs, and they're all still part of that team, even though they have different roles. But then we have sterile processing that's often isolated from the OR, and they don't quite have that innate team building that comes from being in the same place, whereas in the past, everybody kind of followed, I want to say, the instrument life cycle through all of that cleaning as well as use in the room. Point of use cleaning, I've often gotten the complaint of, well, yeah, but you're not supposed to use normal saline on the instruments. And it's like, yeah, but you should have sterile water on the field. When it comes to point of use cleaning, what are some of the common reasons that you've heard from staffers that have said, no, I don't do that, or, oh, it's too hard, or what are the objections to doing point of use cleaning, and how have you helped them overcome those?
Whether you're an OR leader or whether you're an SPD leader or a consultant or whatever your role is, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, you can do it. But when you've lived it, as I was speaking of earlier, it's very easy to demonstrate versus just talking. So you made some great comments, right? Because we intermingle very well in the OR, and then the folks in sterile processing being in a totally different location, they don't have that opportunity to break bread together and develop working relationships like the OR team may. So it's very important. So what I've done in the past is, you know, you have the general conversation, say, listen, we have to do point of use cleaning. It's not just about spraying some enzymatics on at the end of the case, shoving it in a case cart. That's not going to be addressed for several hours because there's 700 instrument sets ahead of it. It's about really maintaining your sterile field, and that's your responsibility. See, in the old days when we scrubbed, we had one instrument set, one retractor. We might pull some peel packs in case we needed something, and that was it. So it was a lot easier to maintain your stuff. Now, if you look at orthopedic oncology case, you may have 80 sets that were opened on that procedure. So it's astronomical for both sides, the OR and the SPD side, to maintain those instruments the way you're supposed to. But in the old days, you only had one scrub tech. So we held retractors, we passed instruments, we cleaned them during the case. So when somebody says it can't be done, that's when I usually scrub in. So when I'm on a consulting gig, whether it's just pure consulting or whether I'm doing some interim work helping that organization out, you know, if the conversations don't go well in the sense that they start complying with some of the process changes, I just scrub in the next day and I show them how it's done, because I've done it for over 30 years and it can be done. You just got to work it into your process. So you can't be lazy, because there's a patient at the end of that instrument. And to say that it's SPD's responsibility, then you lose ownership of your sterile field, your responsibilities for that surgical procedure. So I can understand maybe in some cases like trauma, when the patient's life is at stake and it's all chaos in the operating room, but there's no excuse why a surgical technician, a first assistant, can't keep their instrumentation clean throughout the procedure, especially in these days when there's two or three surgical techs or first assistants at the table with the surgeon.
David, I really love hearing you say this, because this is all just hitting the nail right on the head. And it's interesting that when we talk about, you know, the surgical technologist's primary responsibility is to protect that sterile field, and sometimes that, you know, there's a gap in our understanding when we aren't personally involved with each of the steps in the cleaning. So like Justin said, things get more complex, things get separated, and it becomes incredibly easy to ignore, blame the people who aren't in the room. So I think what's critical there is then building those collaborations and bringing the two that kind of got separated, bringing them back together. So what are some strategies for building those collaborations that break down those silos?
So it's building up the relationships between the two departments. So there's a couple different ways of doing it. One way that I always incorporate into my management style is by bringing SPD together with the operating room during the huddles. So in my morning huddle or my shift huddles, there'll always be a representative or two from sterile processing. So as we go through the day schedule, the safety events, whatever's going on in the operating room that we need to talk about, SPD will always have a voice. They will have, you know, 5 minutes, say, to discuss the issues. So we'll talk about room one has Dr. Smith, and Dr. Smith has four joints. We're going to need to turn over at least one, if not two, of those power sets. Sterile processing is there to hear that, but they also have a voice to say, now, wait a minute, if you don't get that to us or you don't give us a call, we won't be able to get that done in a timely manner. So why don't you buzz me, you know, three quarters of the way through that first case so I can come up here and I'll pick up that set. Far too often, you kind of said it, you know, taking control over that sterile field, they don't want to let go of anything. But once those implants are in place, there's nothing to say that you can't remove instrumentation from the sterile field. So if you're taking off the reamers or the drills or the saws or the whatever, you know, sterile processing now has a head start versus waiting until that patient leaves the room. So giving them a voice at the table, being our morning huddle or our afternoon huddle when we change shifts, allows everybody to communicate about what the issues are. Second, by doing that, I think it empowers sterile processing to let them know that they are part of the team and they do have a voice. So if somebody gives any grief, if you will, to sterile processing, well, you guys didn't turn our stuff over last night, or you didn't do this yesterday, or oh, I found my instruments were disassembled. That's great. You know, apologize for that happening. I need to know what the information is. So save the count sheet, for example, so I know who put that instrument set together. I'll have a conversation with them, find out what the details are. I'll get back to you with those answers by the afternoon huddle, and then we'll move forward. So yes, people make mistakes and errors are made, but it's not about pointing fingers. It's about working together collaboratively so that the patient has a better outcome. Kind of the flip side to that is if there is an issue with an instrument or there is an issue with something going on there, the procedure, and the instrument doesn't cut, it doesn't clamp properly, whatever, usually what happens, right? The surgeon screams and yells and, you know, everybody's on edge now because the surgeon's upset. And of course, something's not working. Well, who takes the brunt of that? That's the OR staff. SPD doesn't take the brunt of that. They're downstairs listening to rock and roll music, putting their instrument sets together. So what I do to make that a different kind of experience is I've empowered all of my staff to make the phone call. They call sterile processing, say, it was Jack who put this instrument set up. Is he available? Dr. Smith is having some issues. Jack can come up. And generally, what I will tell you is Dr. Smith is not ugly to Jack because Jack, he's never seen before. And surgeons don't yell and scream at people they don't know. They only yell at us that they see every day. So he tells Jack, Jack, this rongeur is not working properly, or this chisel is not doing what it's supposed to do, or whatever. And now there's a relationship between my surgeon and that sterile processing person. Far too often, sterile processing doesn't even know the end result of their work. They just know they put instrument together and it goes upstairs and they use it and it comes back down and everybody's complaining about them. But they don't know really why.
That's a fantastic point. And it's an important one to be made. Not only have I heard people say, well, another great way to build this collaboration is to have new hires in the OR spend a day or two in sterile processing to give them increased awareness. But I rarely hear the counter to that, which is let's have sterile processing spend more time in the OR so that they can gain that insight that you just described in a very excellent story. There was another thing that you said that I wanted to kind of follow up on as we wrap this first segment. You described the reamers and being able to pull those out of the OR before the case is over. And I think anytime you look at a good quality system and a process like that, especially one as circular as this, right? Everything goes in one direction and it goes in a circle. And so with that in mind, you hear a lot of terms like pull through. And that's really what I thought of immediately when you said, let's get this stuff where the sterile processing technician maybe goes up and pulls that instrument out of the OR. That, I think, is probably a revolutionary concept, honestly, because very rarely do you see the sterile process. There are places, I do understand that, but I would say not the most common scenario to see somebody from sterile processing frequently making trips up to the OR, but guiding that pre-cleaning process and pulling that instrumentation down might do a lot to enhance turnaround times.
Absolutely. And I think just some of the examples I gave, it's helped me in my profession as a leader, because by building the team together and making sure that it is collaborative, then they feel comfortable walking into the OR. But you made a comment about just a couple days for new hires. I take it way beyond a couple days. If you're a new OR tech or nurse, you're going to, part of your orientation is going to be in sterile processing, and it's going to be a minimum of 10 days because I want you to work a couple days and decon it and know the horrors of what decon can be when you've got 700 instrument sets that keep coming, and it seems like the pile of instruments is never ending. When you feel that pain, you might want to clean your instruments just a little bit more. And whether you're a tech or a nurse, my nurses who are circulating are going to tell those techs, listen, I worked in decon for 3 days. You're going to clean that instrument before you put it back into the set. And they go through the assembly process, and they go through the process of annotating everything appropriately in our records so that they understand fully what they're getting into with their license and or with their profession. On the flip side, I bring sterile processing up, not generally for 10 days, but I try to rotate them a day or two in each service line. So that's going to depend on how large your OR is. And I always incorporate that as part of my orientation. So when my CFO says to me, hey, how long's orientation take? I said, well, it depends on what you mean. Are you talking about the generic orientation where they're just going to learn to scrub and that's it? Or are you talking about where they're going to be a team player and be a long-term employee in this organization because they feel valued? You've got to, as a leader, build that into your budget. And even if it's not built into your budget, there's ways to do it. And you just got to get it done if you really want this to work.
David, that's some incredible insight. I really enjoyed the collaboration just in that first segment. I think we gave a lot of our listeners some real good food for thought in different ways to approach that collaboration between the OR and SPD, improve patient outcomes, and on it goes and on it goes. So I know we're wrapping segment one and we're going to come back and talk about the OR Today Live conference, but I am already saying to myself that there's a future guest appearance on this show for you again, because I feel like we're just warming up. We'll be right back after a short break with David Taylor, president of the Resolute Advisory Group, LLC, to talk about the OR Today Live conference. We're back with David Taylor, president of the Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. And in this segment, David, we'd like to talk about the OR Today Live conference and really preview it. I think you know Hank very well because of his involvement with OR Today Live. And a past guest on the show, Jim Stubinsky, also spoke at last year's conference. So maybe we just kick off this segment. You tell us a little bit about what to expect in Nashville, what makes the OR Today Live conference unique comparative to other conferences, and then how SPD has become an increasing focus at the conference in recent years.
I'd love to talk to you a little bit about OR Today Live. I think this show is really an up-and-comer, and I think they are certainly going to take a huge market share from the surgical conference community. What I love about OR Today Live is that it's a little bit different than every other conference I've either spoken at or attended. And I say that because the OR Today team is very open to new ideas. Many of us are familiar with AORN, we're familiar with ISHUM, and these are very respected industry leaders who bring a wealth of knowledge to the forefront for all of us healthcare providers, whether that's through a journal of scholarly writing or whether that's through their conferences. But we all know how large and how cumbersome some of these conferences can be. AORN, for example, is huge. They have 5,000-plus nurses who attend. They have hundreds of vendors. They're in these giant convention centers. And it's just sheerly exhausting talking about it because you can easily put 25, 30,000 steps in a day just getting back and forth to your education sessions, through the vendor hall, et cetera. But it's also very, say, focused on that specific area. So OR nurses, ISHUM very much focuses on the CS and the sterile processing space. OR Today Live is a little bit different. The show itself is 4 years old. They had their first show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Then it was in Chicago. The most recent show was in Washington, D.C. And the next show for 2018 will be in Nashville, Tennessee. The show stemmed from their magazine. Now, OR Today produces a magazine on a monthly basis, and it's been around about 16 years. So they're not new to the market from a publishing perspective, but they are a little bit newer from the conference perspective. What makes it really unique, though, is they want everybody to attend that touches the surgical space, whether that is sterile processing, an OR technician, a nurse, a CRNA, whoever can gain knowledge from the educational sessions, they want them there. So there is no blocking of anybody attending this.
Yeah, David, as Justin mentioned, I had the opportunity last year to speak and attend OR Today Live. And I was blown away at the level of synergy and collaboration that I saw between those same groups that you're talking about right now, OR nurses, perioperative leaders, SPD professionals, and even infection control practitioners, all at the same conference, all interacting in the same sessions and growing together as a surgical team. I know for me, it was truly an eye-opening experience.
My exposure to the organization began at the Chicago show. I was invited to speak, and I did a presentation about sterile processing as well as one in the operating room. Both were well received, and as a speaker, you know, you get your evals, and then you move on, and, you know, you make some changes to your presentation, whatever, to make it better. But I got a call shortly after the show, and they asked me if I would be a part of their next show. And that was the DC show, and I said, absolutely. One of the things that was interesting was the super sessions that OR Today Live presents. So on their Sunday, they have several classes that are 3 hours long, and that's what they're calling super sessions. And I had the good fortune of working with a colleague named Melanie Burton. She's a registered nurse, been in the industry for many years, and very much an expert in infection prevention. We put together a presentation called Medical Errors, Now the Third Leading Cause of Death in the U.S., Leveraging What We Know About SSI Prevention. And I covered the sterile processing aspects of this presentation, and Melanie covered the operating room. It's very well received. But as we presented, what I found was a lot of the attendees were just enamored with the information. Kristen and I, the vice president of OR Today, put together the educational agenda. And we really made it a point to look at sterile processing. And what we found was that every sterile processing session that we put on was filled to capacity. In fact, the OR Today Live team had to put in additional chairs to accommodate the attendees who were clamoring to get that information. So we knew it was a hit. We had Cynthia Spry speak last year, and she was huge. Hank spoke. We had Jim Stabinski, as you said. Jim spoke on several issues, and he's awesome. So we definitely put sterile processing kind of in the forefront of a registered nursing surgical conference. This year for Nashville, we're going to do the same thing. So one of the breakout sessions will definitely be sterile processing. The additional breakouts will be a clinical piece as well as management. And we're going to look at all three of those, not just in a fixed facility being a hospital, but looking at those specific areas in an ambulatory market as well, because we know that the leaders and the healthcare workers in those environments have challenges too. So OR Today Live is just this really powerful juggernaut, if you will, that's coming up the ranks and really putting on these phenomenal shows.
Sounds like, David, collaboration that we talked about in the first segment is really one of the defining features of, you know, OR Live Today conference, you know, here in the second segment. I was wondering if you could tell us about your work on the Educational Advisory Board of OR Live Today conference and just kind of talk about long-term what the direction you're seeing and what sort of, you know, as the demand for sterile processing education increases, what are some of those areas that people are really hungry for within sterile processing?
Yeah, so the Educational Advisory Board kind of grew into its current role. Like I was saying just a few moments ago, Kristen and I would have weekly conversations about education, finding the right speakers for the right topics, and just kind of put the show together. Behind the scenes, of course, OR Today and OR Today Live had a lot of work to do But we were trying to find the speakers to fit the specific breakout sessions for that show. And being sterile processing, I knew a lot of folks in that market that could definitely fit the bill. And they did. Boy, did they do a great job. So this year, what I recommended to the OR Today and OR Today Live team was, let's put together an advisory board made up of different people from different segments of our world. I chair the committee this year. We've invited Lieutenant Colonel Eb Merritt. He's an Army Nurse Corps officer. So Eb kind of covers that military perspective, if you will. Dawn Whiteside is the Director of Education from CCI. That's the Competency and Credentialing Institute. We had Giselle Peters. She's an OR manager from the Sahara Surgery Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have Chris Bolton, who is a clinical educator. She's from St. Rose Dominican Hospital in Henderson, Nevada. We have Hank Balch. And then finally, Kristen Lavoie, who's the Vice President of MD Publishing. And this collaborative approach that we talked about earlier in our first segment, that was what I wanted to bring to the advisory board. I really think humbly of my colleagues, because there are so many smart people in our industry doing some wonderful, wonderful things. And I think in order for the OR Today Live conference to be so successful, I think if we look at it from a collaborative approach, it's going to be very powerful. And by bringing people together with different skill sets and working in different environments, we're sure to hit the beat, so that way the attendees will definitely have sessions that are going to work for them and give them the tools that they need to take back and do their jobs even better.
So maybe just dive in a little bit onto the conference details. You know, when is the conference being held? I think we already know it's going to be in Nashville, but what's some of the cost, and do they separate the educational offerings into tracks?
The conference itself, yes, is in Nashville, Tennessee. It'll be August 26th through the 28th. It's generally in a hotel, so it's a lot more intimate of a setting than you would be at a big, giant conference hall. Education is broken down into tracks. The three tracks will be management, a clinical track, and then a CSSPD track. As far as costs are concerned, I really can't get very specific on what the total costs are, because obviously people coming from different environments. But the OR Today live show, I will tell you, is approximately half of what I have spent on other shows. The registration fee is generally half or a third of what everybody else is charging. Hotel, they get their hotel prices extremely low so that the attendees have great value there. Because it's in a hotel, I think it makes it even better, because you have the opportunity to go to and from your room without really much travel between your classes, if you will.
So, David, it sounds like a really good time. I like what you said about it being more of an intimate setting. To me, that means engaging. You know, when people can really spend a lot of time together and have an opportunity to have a discussion, the broad coverage of those tracks also really important, and really the response of the attendees, as you said, to the SPD content is encouraging, obviously, for us and in our show. So I'm looking forward to going. But where can people go to find more information? I'm certain there's a website.
They can go to ortoday.com and have access to the magazine itself. You can sign up for a free subscription. It's a monthly magazine that comes out with some really great articles, has some great recipes, some great highlights. It also does some great things by highlighting healthcare professionals throughout the country who are doing some wonderful things, and they also are our future leaders. And OR Today does a great job doing that. As far as the conference is concerned, you can go to ortodaylive.com and get all the information you need there to either register, or if you have vendors that are listening to this podcast, there's always kinds of opportunities with sponsorship, getting a booth, the magazine itself, and the different advertisement opportunities there. But you talked a little bit about engagement. I'm going to tell you that this show is a huge opportunity to network with all of the folks within your organization or organizations throughout the country. Whether you're a big corporation or you're just a standalone hospital, this is a great show. When I go to some of these larger conferences, what I often find is I don't ever get a chance to talk to the speaker. So I might have some questions that went unanswered. Or maybe in the middle of the night, I had a groundbreaking event where I thought of something that I needed to ask that speaker, and I know I'd never be able to. At this show, because the speakers generally stay and attend the show as well, and because of its smaller format, I'm able to sit down with that speaker possibly the next day or a couple days later and share my thoughts and ask lots of questions. The other thing that makes this show so intimate is that OR Today provides live entertainment. They've also fed the attendees in the past. So that was things that, you know, when you go to a conference, you know, you want to do some extra curricular activities after maybe the educational sessions or after the expo hall. They provide that live entertainment, and it's just incredible. They brought a singer in from Nashville last year, and she did about an hour and a half on stage live. It was awesome. And the owner of MD Publishing actually purchased all the attendees a copy of her CD, which she autographed and mailed to everybody. So it was pretty incredible. The ability to break bread and actually talk with your vendors and get to know them is huge. I find that to be very beneficial in my world when I'm buying millions of dollars worth of capital. Instead of rushing around trying to get from place to place because there's miles and rows of vendors at some of these larger conferences, here's a reasonable number that you get to see them all and you actually get to meet them and talk with them and exchange business cards. So I think overall the whole conference concept, the ability to invite everybody to the show, regardless of what your healthcare professional background may be, the ability to bring information and insights from all aspects of our world and not worry about it just being registered nurses or not just being surgical, it's all inclusive. We have some phenomenal speakers already set up for this year in all areas, and the board will actually be meeting next week to start discussing, you know, who made the cut and who didn't. And the ones who didn't, I think we're going to try and use as backups or some other way because they're just so good we don't want to let them go.
That's excellent news. The fact that you have so many potentially awesome presenters that you actually have to put some of them, you know, in the queue, so to speak, for any last minute situations that arise. That means that I think attendees can really count on excellent quality presenters no matter what happens. So, David, I just wanted to say thank you for coming on to the show, sharing your insights. And I know we brought your interview in kind of last minute, but as I've said to many of the guests before, and we'll say it again, I know we were basically just heating up at the end of segment one. So I know that we've got a lot of content to discuss when we have you on again on a future show.
I'd be glad to join you again at any time.
That was David Taylor, president of the Resolute Advisory Group, LLC. And I almost felt bad, Hank and Mike, closing out segment one because clearly David was getting on a roll. I love his passion, especially for SPD, obviously as our show is focused on the department and the challenges facing sterile processing every day. I can see an opportunity for him to come back. I think that conversation about the collaboration between OR and SPD is one that can be had from multiple different angles. But even just the perspective of OR Today Live encouraging SPD content and being a venue for people to come away from work and collaborate and help bridge that gap and increase that communication between the two departments is fantastic.
Yeah, Justin, that theme of collaboration is not going anywhere anytime soon in our industry. It will come up again and again at these conferences, and as it has on the show, it'll come up again on the podcast because the mission is so critical and the teams and even the architectures, like we talked about with Dr. Nichols' episode, are so siloed. It's by design. Having that focus on how do we build synergy and teamwork amongst these teams that impacts communication and ultimately quality, I think we had a great example of that in today's show. And on the topic of the conference, as I said, I had the opportunity to go, had a fantastic experience. I know this Nashville conference is going to be just as good, if not better. I cannot wait to be there with all of our listeners and the rest of you guys.
Yeah, I really would love to make it to that conference. I'm going to try to clear off some schedule space and see if I can make that happen, because it does sound incredible. And Justin, what you were saying about feeling bad about cutting him off, man, it really felt like we were just really getting rolling. And there's so many things that we just scratched the surface on, especially in that first segment. You know, we just barely talked about implementing lean strategy throughout. And so I personally am really looking forward to bringing him back.
Yeah, we definitely have to have David back again. Even after we closed the interview, we talked for another 20 minutes on various subjects that I think we should bring to the listeners. So I'm looking forward to doing that as well. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review. Your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you would like us to cover on a future episode, or if you would like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send us an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.